Welcome to the Dive into Reiki podcast. I'm Natalie, and together we will enjoy a series of conversations that explore the journey of Reiki practitioners and teachers from all lineages. 100% Reiki-focused stories, 100% human. Hi, and welcome to the Dive into Reiki podcast. Today I have a very special guest. She just landed from quite a few weeks in India and doing some serious spiritual work. And I'm going to try, just bear with my accent. Her name is Rajashree Ma, and she's a master of four Reiki lineages and a teacher of meditation, yogi wisdom, and holistic wellness. She graduated from the University of Michigan with a degree in world religious studies, then studied theology at Vanderbilt University and earned a master's degree in human development counseling. Rajashree Ma went on to receive her PhD in psychology from the University of Memphis and practiced as a clinical psychologist for over 30 years in Napa, California, before devoting her life entirely to the wisdom school, Hula, her yogic studies, and her spiritual sadhana. After embarking on a long course of deep meditation in 2008, Rajashree Ma experienced a many-year series of mystical encounter with Divine Mother in the form of Kali Ma. Out of these revelations, a new Reiki lineage, Kali Ki Reiki, was born. And the Kali Ki Reiki symbols are life forms that transmit the universe love force energy of healing to all levels of the being, physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. And for the people who are listening to my podcast and know I'm a very traditional Japanese kind of person, very minimalist, I want to say that when I got Rajashree information, I was really curious, because we always talk about having all these lineages and there is a lineage for everyone. But one thing I really like is that you can see her background. Like, I like PhD, serious studies for years. So there is a real amount of wisdom behind this Reiki lineage. And for me, it was interesting. Like, I never spoke to someone who actually took those Reiki lineages and evolved it into something that may be in demand for other people. So I'm really grateful for you to join this conversation today and being here with me, with the other extreme, right? I'm like the minimalist. Like, if a store defined me, I would be Muji. So thank you so much for saying yes to this conversation.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Natalie. And I'm looking forward to this discussion because, yes, what I teach is not traditional Japanese Reiki. And I have deep respect for what you do. And, you know, the truth is, and I think I've explained this to you, I was very cautious and hesitant to introduce a new lineage. And so I did it very slowly and very gradually, and it's only on the publication of my book last year that I've started to go, I would say, public. You know, we already had a community. I've mastered at least 75, almost 100 people now, but it still was very local. And so the opportunity to talk with you and to begin to meet other people kind of in the bigger world of Reiki and to share this is, it's a new process in my evolution and in the evolution of Kali Ki Reiki. So thank you.
Excited, and welcome. We'll go to that after, but when we talked the first time, we discovered that at the end we reached the same point, which is what happens when people have a deep practice, right? So we're going to talk about that and about what Kali Ki Reiki is. But I start every interview with the same question, and I ended with the same question always. And I just wanted to hear, like, your first contact with Reiki practice. How did you get there? Some people study, some people get a session for free. What was your experience?
Yeah, so I'm going to go kind of way back, because my first understanding that there was some kind of healing other than Western medical science was actually when I was 12 years old and I read the New Testament front to, you know, cover to cover for the first time. And what I realized in reading it myself, separate from the Bible stories I had learned, is that Jesus spent the majority of his time doing healing, right? And that's not what we're shown. I mean, yes, there, you know, we get the stories of his healing, but we don't really get it until we see, oh my gosh, this is what that great master was doing. And so from a very early age, I had this sense of energy healing without even a name for that, right? But I knew there was something else because I grew up in the 50s and 60s. And so it's, you know, Reiki was certainly not a household word at all during that time. And, you know, when I presented this insight to one of the church elders, I was basically told, well, you know, Joni, you know, Jesus had to heal in that way those days, but we have medical science, so we don't need to do that. And it was like, what? And so I kind of took a traditional path in many ways. I became a psychologist, but all along, I was searching for something. I began to practice yoga. I began to practice meditation. And then I just read about Reiki. And I thought, oh, that's what I'm looking for. But it took a very, very long time until I could find a Reiki teacher, right? In those days, the few Reiki
teachers. Yeah. Yeah. There were very few of them at the beginning.
There were very few. And then anybody that would advertise would say $10,000 and I'll make you a master. And, you know, I was young and I didn't have much money. And it was like, are you kidding me? What is that? So it actually took a while. And I was already doing a certain kind of hands-on healing that is done in the Christian church. I had started doing that when finally a dear friend of mine studied with Barbara Brennan, Hands of Life, and she became a Reiki master. So she then attuned me to first and second level. And I began to then have the ability to offer this kind of healing, even though I'd already been doing it with the Christian laying on of hands in a certain way. So I was very grateful for that. But my dear friend Anne, that wasn't what she was doing. She wasn't really a Reiki teacher. It took me another 10 years before I found someone who I felt could take me to master. And her name was Connie Pike. She since has gone very deep into her Buddhist studies and spends most of her time in retreat and has a new spiritual name. But anyway, it was really when I became a master that I began offering healing to people and, you know, finding that amazing things would happen, miraculous things. And so I was absolutely thrilled with my Reiki practice. And of course, when I received it and it combined with, I already had a very deep meditation practice, and I feel like I'm jumping ahead, but.
No, but I also think it's very important. There are a couple of things I love of what you said, right?
Okay.
10 years about finding the person you felt prepared for a master. You had a deep meditation practice. I like that part of, like, sometimes we think a Reiki practice, and also you were doing already hands-on healing with the Christian method, right? And we forget the Reiki system is a system to harness an energy that is loving kindness. And we may call it different ways, but at the end, you know, there are many ways to access that are different. Like, I just want to highlight, like, the seriousness with which you approach your practice. I think that, for me, I really appreciate in you going through your process.
Yeah, thank you. And yes, I mean, this is where you and I came to when we had our pre-interview.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, there's only one divine energy.
Yep.
And we can call it Reiki, we can whatever we call it, there's only one. However, there are many methods.
Yeah. And even many flavors of that energy sometimes, right?
So many flavors of that energy, so many frequencies of that energy. And yet ultimately it all is one. So what happened then is it wasn't long after I was mastered, after I'd done this intensive year-long master apprenticeship with Connie Pike, that I started having these downloads and these experiences with Divine Mother, who was showing me other symbols. And so then, although I'd been really practicing Reiki since the early 1990s, it was around 2007, 2008 that it culminated and began to appear in a whole different way than what I had been trained in.
And I think also, again, you had like all these studies you're doing on the side, your meditation practice, right? And I know we discussed that, and obviously you will have gone your way no matter what, but I think the information available from Reiki at the beginning also wasn't so much depth of understanding the whole spiritual, you call it wisening, the enlightenment part, that it was really a practice towards enlightenment. It was just not just to cure your knee pain or your heartbreak. And yes, probably that also was something that was, because, and when I go to your website, there is a lot in your book, a lot of the mention of the word wisening, which it was new for me. But I understood it as enlightenment. So probably that also was an interest that started showing up in your life.
Well, exactly. And I think it just correlated. The more I did Reiki and the more I did meditation, and the meditation practice I was doing was based in what's called Kashmir Shaivism, which is a non-dual yogic practice. So there's the difference that yogic practices are a little bit more elaborate in a certain way, right, than the, like you said, you know, the simple Buddhist practices, right?
Like I'm literally a Zen person.
Exactly. You're more minimalist, and you know, we've got our breath practices and we've got our movement practices and we've got all that, but there's this real emphasis on the divine feminine, the divine mother. And so all these things converged, right? My meditation practice, my yogic studies, and the fact that I was a practicing clinical psychologist, right? And helping people to overcome their psychological obstacles so that they could connect more deeply, not just with their egoic self, but their true self. Right. And to me, Reiki really was a wonderful addition to that. But as a psychologist, right, you don't put hands on people. And so there was a long period of time where I was kind of doing Reiki on the side with friends. And then I would have a few clients, a psychology clients that, okay, I think we can work with this Reiki stuff too. And, you know, eventually it just got to the point of, I felt like the Reiki work, the way that we were doing it, went much deeper, actually, than the psychological work. Not to say that there isn't a need for talk therapy for many people. Of course there is. But I feel like the Reiki work went deeper because it works body, emotions, mind, and psyche, and spirit. And so eventually, I basically retired my psychology license so that I could do this full time. Yeah.
Amazing. And it's funny, I think also a lot of here when we've heard, and we got it probably when it came with Mrs. Takata, like hands on Reiki on, hands off Reiki off. And some of the lineages, at least they're called Japanese style. Some of the traditional Japanese are like, no, like we can just hold the presence with the energy, right? But those, so every lineage is bringing their own flavor. And yeah, I think for many times we've limited Reiki like to a thing that is hands-on and is for healing versus it could be without hands and it's about really reconnecting with the true self. So
absolutely. And you're right. And I could do that in my psychology practice. I could just invite the Reiki into the room. And whenever I did that, it made a huge difference, and it allowed them to go deeper. But you know,
yeah, you're talking with your brain, like, you're like still in your rational mind. And I have to say, too much information, but actually I combine therapy with my meditation practice, Reiki and martial arts, and that works wonders. Like, you know, but I don't think one without, like, therapy without Reiki or meditation practice will take me anywhere. But it does work beautifully together. So I love that you retired, you took the job. And I would love for people to understand a little bit what Kali Ki Reiki is. If you can just describe it simply, I think it will be great for people to know what's your flavor a little bit.
Okay. So the flavor is, it is very much influenced by my own background, right? By my experience with the divine feminine and by my yogic background. Now, one could say, therefore, I flavored it, but I don't think that's the case. I think it's because I already had this loving relationship with Ma, the divine feminine, and because I was a psychologist with an understanding of you know, emotional and mental transformation, and because I was a student of yogic philosophy and meditation, that I was therefore ripe to receive what I received, because this is not my invention, you know.
That is the right thing to highlight, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so what started happening as these practices converge is I began to have these experiences, these downloads, in which initially, it was just a matter of light. So, for example, the first symbol that I received, it happened over a period of 7 nights. I call that my 7 nights of light, in which I was awakened every night. I was in a very dark room with room darkening blinds and all of that. But I was awakened at the same time every night by this glowing light throughout the space that I was in. And each night, it was like the light started to take form. It was like light was emerging out of light. And by the end of the seventh night, it was in the form of what in the West we call a trident, what in yoga, and actually in Buddhism, is called the trishul, the three. And I was told by Divine Mother that this was to be used as a Reiki symbol and to be used in healing. So there it was. I didn't really know what to do with it, right? I'd been trained in the traditional Usui method. I had the Usui symbols, and here was this symbol. So I took it to my teacher, and to my teacher's teacher, who is very traditional, and she was in Germany at the time, so we talked over Skype, and I sent the symbol to her, and she said, "Oh no, this is phenomenally powerful, and you must use it with your students," because I was already mastering people. And at the time, that symbol, we felt was only for very advanced students. Now it's actually the first symbol people learn in our tradition. And I could go into some detail about what the symbol means and how we use it. But what I'd like to emphasize right now is it was shown to me as pure light. And when I had been trained in the Usui symbols, they were never presented to me as light forms. You know, you saw them as these, you know, black lines on paper, and we memorized them and we worked with them, and they were lovely, and we were working with them energetically. So I suppose in a certain way, they were light, but it wasn't emphasized. And what happened as I received ultimately 11 symbols and then various iterations of some of those 11, so up to 18 symbols over the next 12 years, is they were all forms of light, and they were dancing forms. which to me is very feminine, right? It's the divine feminine. They're moving and they're transforming, and one kind of morphs into the other. Whereas in traditional Reiki, I was taught, you know, those symbols are they're a certain way, and they're kind of static, you know, and you just learn exactly how to draw them, and then you've got to get it exactly right. And here I am being presented with these symbols that are just dancing all over the place and morphing. And when I would offer it to someone, it would then cause their energy system to start dancing and morphing and transforming. And that was part of the healing. So anyway, at a certain point, first of all, after receiving the first symbol, I thought, well, okay, that's it. We'll just add this in to, you know, our Arasui symbols. And that's not very traditional, but, you know, clearly it's being called. But then more symbols started showing up and more practices. And it was like, suddenly I realized, oh my goodness, you know, this is actually its own lineage and its own system. At which point I went and I talked to a couple of other traditional Reiki healers, one very well known, who was, you know, very skeptical and not very encouraging. And then I also talked to William Rand, you know, whose Reiki is not the traditional Reiki, but, you know, he's the real deal as far as I'm concerned. And he was much more positive about this. And he basically said, yes, this is Reiki, but, you know, you can't just call it, you can't call it
Usui.
You know, and so that's when the name actually kind of came to me in a vision or a revelation, Kali Ki. So Kali, the force of transformation. And notice I'm saying force, not goddess, because it's not like we're worshiping an icon, right? But Kali is that energy of transformation that requires release and certain things to be removed in order to make way for the new, right? And that's what Reiki healing is all about, right? We need to release, we need to cleanse, and then, you know, we get filled with the light and filled with the newness, and the transformation takes place. And then Ki, you know, for the life force energy. So it became Kali Ki Reiki. And so
I appreciate you telling the, it's just, there is something very, I love when you're talking about this beautiful symbol dancing and morphing into each other and being light, because I think also, so in some Reiki more traditional lineages, you meditate with those symbols and you usually visualize them. It's all about light, the whole. And right. Also when you meditate with the first symbol and the second symbol, the third symbol for years, you start realizing they're all connected and they're not. And other stuff I'm not going to share here because it's part of the practice, but like this rigidity of the black line that this is for this and this is for that. Again, it's the same as hands-on Reiki. It's like we're making a practice that is very deep, very simple and rigid. And I think at the end, the real, like literally, like if you meditate with the first symbol for years, you're going to have so many flavors and it's going to transform into so many things, right? It's not just a little thing like the power symbol. Like that is such a shortening to that symbol, right? So yeah. That's why, like, when we talk about these things, yes, Kali Ki Reiki is different and it will appeal to different people who perhaps want a little bit more variety and they need, and they appeal to the Divine Mother. But at the end, this light, the cleansing, the transformation are principles that are common. And I think also it's a good way when we talk about this thing to also understand people who are using the traditional quote marks Reiki, to not get stuck to like, this is, do not put things into a little box and not explore further.
Perfect.
Because I literally am a minimalist, right? I've been practicing for those four symbols for like, over 15 years. And I cannot see them as rigid and a black line, right? There is so much more to that.
I'm
So
so glad. Yeah. Right. And they're multi-dimensional. You know, they're not two-dimensional like something on a piece of paper.
they're life itself, honestly,
Yeah,
right?
that's
They're
right.
alive.
That's what I was just going to say. They're life, they're alive. And yeah, and they're such a gift. And to me, each one of the symbols, the Usui and the Kaliki, you know, they kind of are gateways to different frequencies of the universal energy. And so that's why, you know, each one of the symbols kind of has its realm in which it heals most effectively. And every symbol is also universal. You know, any symbol, any of these symbols, because they're divine, are going to take us to the universal. Yeah.
And it's, yeah, I listen, I yes, doing like it's the same thing. Like we can meditate like with the power symbol forever, and it will take us perhaps a little longer, but it will take us where the master symbol takes us. Like at the end, it's really, as you say, they may be okay, the power symbol is more earthly, it has a little bit more focus and more these qualities. But if you practice with years, you realize like the whole universe is encompassing every of the symbol, right? And
Well, right. You know, you're right. A symbol that acts on the physical is still acting on energy because the physical is the energy of the universe. So, but and maybe it just also takes, it's not just about, well, it is about meditating on the symbols, but it's also the wisening, as I call it, that takes place over the years as we're practicing, and the transformation that happens to us when, you know, we're offering, you know, all we're doing, right, is placing hands or holding hands or setting intention, and things are changing. It's like, okay, we realize that this material universe is not just that. So.
And what I find interesting, right? Like we also, everybody has a very different brain and cultural background and interest. And I think like, yes, maybe four symbols are not attractive and like some symbols, but at the end they're different doors to the same place. So that's why, like, again, like that's why I like to have these conversations. You and I have different styles, but like at the end, there's so many people there. The important thing is to bring them the door and to find something that resonates. The other thing I love, because I remember when we had the first conversation, I'm like, oh, the divine feminine, the divine mother, but like what happened with non-duality and being one? And you had a great answer that I really appreciated because I have a journalist background. I'm going to ask a bunch of questions, and you had a great answer for that I would love for you to share as well.
Oh, I don't know if I even remembered that answer, but I think, you know, what you're talking about is, okay, I'm emphasizing the divine feminine, and yes, and there's the interaction of the feminine and the masculine, right? But ultimately they are one. So I'm going to give an example with our Trishul symbol. You know, it's the three prongs of the trident. So to imagine that. But as you know, you can see I'm holding up three fingers. But if we look not at the foreground and we look at the background, there's one, two, three, four. And to me, that's the unity that contains the three. So in so many traditions, including the Christian tradition, right, the Trinity is so very important. And you know, the triangle has certain meanings, and it's very prominent in yogic philosophy. And in yoga, there are three states of consciousness: waking, sleeping, and dreaming. Those are the states of ordinary consciousness, but they're all surrounded and held within what's called the hidden fourth, which is that universal space. So we have the masculine and we have the feminine, and we have them dancing together and interacting, but they're still interacting within the one, the unity, the non-dual. So the dual is a play within the non-dual. So although I'm emphasizing the divine feminine, well, let me just say I'm emphasizing the divine feminine because, for multiple reasons, because we need more of the feminine in our world today. And so to emphasize her, I think, is very important. And it's important socially and politically as well as spiritually. But ultimately, we see beyond there being masculine and feminine and see ultimately the unity. So, for example, I use the word love force in lieu of life force, because to me, everything is love. And I talk about the limitless love that is the source of everything, the limitless pure beingness, the pure awareness of awakening, of wisening, of enlightenment, and what in yoga is called the Brahman, the universal divine, what in Buddhism really is Shunya. Am I saying that right? The emptiness, you know, the nothingness. Right. Yeah. So in Buddhism, it's the nothingness, and in Hinduism, it's the fullness. And they're one and the same. Emptiness is form, and form is emptiness. Right. So everything is within this, and it's dancing within it, but it is always the one. And actually, now I'm not even sure where I'm supposed to go with that. But
answer my question beautifully. That's what you just
said. Okay. I was suddenly.
No, because it was like, so, and part of it, I think you also brought up a very important part politically. We need more feminine, but it doesn't mean that we need to be at war with the masculine, right? Like, there is a lot of feminism now that is, it's not about bringing balance and more feminine and to have a balance and also get rid of both toxic sides, because there is toxic femininity and toxic masculinity, you know, and that's something like, I think sometimes we're bringing this very warrior face of down with the patriarchy. But actually we're one as a society. Like, we need to just, this is really a dance and a balance. This is about bringing more feminine. This is not about, like, if we take a matriarchy and it becomes toxic, like, it's going to also be out of balance, right?
Absolutely.
I really appreciate that you brought the political part, because sometimes we get, and believe me, I'm a like rabid feminist and we're like women's rights. I'm like, love being a woman, and I think it's the coolest thing ever. But I also like, I enjoy the company of masculine, and I do believe balance is needed. Like, you know, we have both of us qualities. And in ourselves, I have a lot of masculine energy. I'm at peace with that. I'm like, I love lipstick and I love everything, but then give me a katana. And at work, I'm like type A. Like, and I love having that masculine energy in me too. It's part of who we all are, right? To bring that balance.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because I think that for me, early on in my career, even though I was a mother and loved being a mother, I actually was a little overboard with the masculine.
We had to get work at the time.
Do work, and you know, I had my control needs and all of that. And so for me, bringing in the divine feminine and awakening to that, you know, personally has been very helpful to find that balance. And, you know, isn't that what healing is all about? Bringing the system, the chakras, bringing the different levels of our being, physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, into harmony. So, of course. So, yes, I don't want to ever emphasize the divine feminine to the exclusion of the masculine, but to aspire to being the feminine aspect of the divine, or a feminine manifestation of the divine and a masculine manifestation of the divine, rather than, you know, the conventional social notions of being feminine and being masculine.
Which is not ideal, and hopefully we'll.
No.
But it's taking us a little bit of time to figure out, right? Like, it's because I think also we don't understand how softening can be very strong. You know, we see strength, I think it's our perception of what strength is that needs to shift a little bit. But I think we'll get there at one point, hopefully.
Right. Well, I'm praying. I hope we get there very soon. So one of our symbols I just would like to explain is the trident, the trishul. So it's three, you know, with a long pedestal. And it's called the Om Trishul. Well, actually, it's our main kind of logo. And it's the logo here on the book.
And so I'll add it to the notes for the podcast for people who are listening. I'll add a picture to the notes so that you know.
Yeah, but the Om and the Trishul together. So we see the Om as the feminine principle and the Trishul as more the masculine principle. And here they are dancing together. And it's like she's embracing the strong masculine, the power symbol, right? And she's embracing it and loving it. And you just kind of picture her, you know, moving around it, and you can picture them spinning. And we use this symbol when, for example, you know how often, especially for women, it's difficult to speak our truth. And, you know, there's that expression to speak truth to power. But what this symbol does is it helps us speak our truth with power, not the power of dominance,
but not anger. Yeah,
and not anger, and so that's one of the uses of that symbol. And then it's also when we need strength, when we need force, and yet, you know, softening it so that we don't present ourselves with anger.
And I think also, again, talking about anger to be strong and you become brittle. But for me, like, and I've noticed this at work, I'm in a highly competitive things and I like it because it's my Reiki practice. I literally have to practice every time because it's creativity. And what I notice is when I say something super calm with great posture, people really listen. It's very powerful. When I'm talking from the right place, I don't need to get angry. I don't need to also apologize, which is on extreme. So I think this is a beautiful thing that you're saying, speaking our truth from a place of power. But that place of power is a very center grounded place.
Right. It's a loving power.
Yeah.
It really is a place of love, and I don't know about you, but I think what you're talking about I've had the similar experience. It's like when I speak from that place, I'm actually very logical. It comes out very logical. It makes a lot of sense, and it just comes out with clarity. It's not muddy, and you know, it's like, oh yeah, that's good. And when we learn how to speak that way in relationship, right? It's like, it's actually almost very matter of fact. It's kind of like, so this is how it is. This is how I see it. And I'm totally accepting of how you see it, but I'm not gonna pretend that I don't see it this way. I'm not gonna fake it. I'm simply gonna make a statement, but I don't have to put a demand on that.
That is very nice. And and I love what you said, it's not muddy, it's clear, right? You're talking about light, symbols of light. In Japanese Reiki also, like, there is this communion, this light coming through. And one thing that you get also when you have a deep practice is clarity. Is this clarity, that true knowing. And I love that you brought those terms here. I also saw that you tweak a little bit the precepts, and I'll be sharing them in the notes. And what I like is, like, you tweak them. So a lot of times we say just for today, do not anger, and people get stressed out, like, ah! But the just for today in Japanese means with every breath, right? Don't be in the past, don't be in the future, be present. And then when I went through your interpretation of the precepts, it was in this present moment, no anger. In this present moment, no worry. And I was like, again, that tweak was, it felt very beautiful because it's about being fully present and in the moment, which is what that original. So I really like this tweak, and I wanted to hear a little bit, you know, how did you come to add that? And then you added this present moment limitless, this present moment love. So it was a very, it felt like a very respectful take on the Japanese, but also we're a different lineage. We respect, we were bringing, and I felt like bringing presence was so important because a lot of people do Reiki and they're thinking about their Amazon shopping list. They daydream and they're placing their hands versus being present. So I wanted to, for you, like to tell me how this came about and what's your intent versus the one I'm putting on it, since you created this twist.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're seeing it perfectly. And it's really good for me to know that the Japanese actually means with every breath, which is the present moment, because, you know, and I don't even know how these things come to me, Natalie. It's like, you know, one day I was just sitting and it was like, oh, this is how it needs to be. Okay, in this present moment, no anger. In this present moment, no worry. In this present moment, gratitude. And you know, one of the things about, okay, one of the emphases to me is it's not just about in this present moment, I'm not going to be angry, or in this present moment, I will make myself grateful. But the truth is, I feel, when we are in presence, right? When we are in present moment, we are aligned with the divine. And then there, it's not just that we make the worry go away. There is no worry. When we're truly centered in presence, there is no anger. When we're truly centered in presence, gratitude just arises. Forgiveness arises. So it's more like a description of what happens when we truly bring ourselves in to the present. So it's not a prescription.
Totally.
It's, yeah. And that's kind of how,
that's what we teach it still, but that's not, yeah, like, so some Japanese masters, the Gakkai, especially Hiroshi Doi, he has a beautiful, so he was a Japanese master who started Western Reiki in Japan, and then he got into the association. And he has a beautiful text, which I'm lucky because it was in Spanish, or translated to Spanish, about what you're talking. Like, these are not prescriptions. These are not commandments. We tend to see them like that in the Western. This describes a state of wise inner enlightenment. This is when you're in this state of connection and centered. There is no anger, no worry. There is gratitude and compassion. And that's what you have to cleanse through your practice, worry and anger, so it's easier to get to this state. So the precepts are the ultimate goal of the practice. And they're also the guidelines. And they're also something that you can practice and chant in Japanese and do a bunch of stuff. So that's when I saw it. I'm like, and that's when I told you, like, this is not for me to agree or disagree. Like, we all have different way of expressing. Some people will do lineages. I will stick. But at the end, when I look at you without judgment and I went through your material, I'm like, you can see there is a serious practice because you are getting to the same way. And for some people, honestly, it took me years to hear about this is just for one bread, just for today. I hated those precepts for years. They felt like an obligation. And I meet a lot of people who feel like I cannot be that. And when I understood what it was about, it took me like 10 years. I was like, oh, this is a very different moment. This is a space from which I share a session. This is a space I should be in a reijun, an attunement. And in your case, you literally explained it so people like me will not struggle for 10 years, right? So, and that's what I sometimes, again, like, we also in the Reiki community, we're very hasty at saying my lineage is better than yours, or I'm more traditional Japanese, I'm better, or I have more symbols, I'm more powerful. But when we have these conversations with people who practice seriously, look, you and I are like, we're smiling and we're glowing for the people who are just listening, right? And we're learning from each other. And that's when I saw the precepts. I really like, wow, like I have to share this with you because we didn't speak about that because I wasn't that far away on your material yet.
Yeah, you know, I think that's I think that's great in multiple ways. And what happened to me is I got kind of turned off by the precepts. I got turned off by some of the traditional teachings that I was learning. And had I been guided to go deeper or, you know, go to Japan and really study, you know, who knows? I might have ended up where you are, but that's not what I was guided to do. I was already doing these yogic practices. And so that's what converged for me. And yes, here we are at saying yes, yes. And so it's so wonderful to me too, to be discovering, you know, that all the time that I was doing my yogic work, so you and many serious Reiki traditional people have been taking it deeper and deeper and deeper, and how wonderful is that. I want to add though that in the principles, the Kali Ki Reiki principles, we have one that I think is different for example, the traditional ones, you have just for today, honest work, which is beautiful and noble and essential, right? We want to do our work honestly, and you know, ultimately, we're not the doer of it, but we must be ethical for sure. So the one that came to me is in this present moment, karma dissolves, and what that means is when we are truly centered, we are not, our habit patterns, what's called samskaras, right? They are not activated. And so we're able to be our pure self.
And you're going to laugh at this again? So that is Gyo O Hageme, and Gyo O Hageme, like the work, honestly, can be translated two other ways and many other ways. One of them is practice diligently. And in Buddhism, when you practice, you remember you're enlightened, you let go of any kind of stuff. And when you say practice diligently means remember all the time you already are enlightened. You can let go of all that.
Okay.
And the way it's been translated is be true to your way and your being. And being true to your way of a being is that bright light, that true self. So that, and but again, I think it's also very interesting because in our society, we live in a Western world. I think the language you use may be very accessible to other people, right? Again, not everyone will be like going to Japan and going to a Zen monastery for 3 weeks and realize, oh, that's what they meant by practice diligently, right? So I love, but at the end, again, we're meeting at a very similar place. But in your case, it's almost like, yeah, it's easier to, it's very approachable to understand what that precept. I have an issue with work, honestly, because it makes like we're working. We're not working.
Right, right, right. The divine is working through us. The energy is working through us. So we need to just get out of the way, yeah?
So that actually was the only one difference I found. And we're going to close that one then with the oops. So I in some Japanese, not all of them, I mean, some of them is more about conduits, but in some of the Japanese lineages, and that comes from Japanese Buddhism, there is something called tariki, which no, like other powers. So even though you have to get out of the way, the universe is working through you. So you're not just a vessel. You're literally like the whole universe is in you. So that is a little, and I think it's also a lot of work because I think in practice it's the same experience, but I think it's a little bit more like you're included in the equation because at the end, but not your
not your ego self.
Not your ego self, but you're not just a vessel, you are part of that universe. So I think
I like that.
But I still think in practice it's the same thing. Honestly, I think that I just wanted to share that because I was like, oh, that's the only way we're maybe in terms of words, we're a little bit more, but
Well, and yeah, I mean, because certainly it's not like we're not puppets, we're not robots. It does work through each one of us in unique ways. So I like that. Yeah, I'm gonna contemplate that a little bit more. I
I
think.
wanted to show, but honestly, it just felt like, yeah, but it's the same. Like, it feels like I'm sharing it, but it's like, there is a certainty that at the end, when it comes to the practice, it's the same thing. You know, like, I think it's just word, but I just wanted to share that because I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Because all the rest, like, and I love like that you highlighted the precept about the karma dissolves because I missed that. But I think it was such a conversation. I close the every interview with one question. And so the same way I start everything the same, I always ask again, I'm like a person starting and I see you with years of practice and you go to India for retreats all the time. You have all these PhDs and masters, which made me even feel like, oh shit, I just literally barely went to my university for 5 years. But you know, and then I'm like, I may be like, okay, will I ever get there? And I think also we have to remember we all are humans and fallible, and that's the beautiful part of our journey. But without failing, we don't learn. Without com and or like our understanding may be limited because we cannot access all the wisdom in one day. So I wanted for you to share like one oops, one teachable lesson that makes you smile, or perhaps you're like, oh, please don't go there.
I mean, I could tell you many. But one of the, I think, the important things, and I teach this in our practices, that for many of us who are Reiki practitioners, we also are psychic and intuitive, and we get messages, right? And I'm going to tell you first a way that I learned what I tried to preach, and then I'll tell you how I didn't do it. I didn't do what I preached. So, a friend of mine who is a Reiki master gave me a session one time, and I just was in all levels of samadhi and bliss at the end of this session. There was no individual me. I was just one with the universe, just totally, totally blissful. The session was over, and she started telling me about how she was picking up on the issues that I have with my daughter-in-law, and telling me what I need to do with my daughter-in-law, and telling me, like how my karma with her wasn't good, and et cetera, and et cetera. And it was like, it was such a downer.
I'm getting upset, and now I'm not even like, it's not even my daughter-in-law. I'm like, yeah, I'm getting like,
What she picked up on was true, but that wasn't where I was at in this moment. And so the mistake that she made was not stopping to ask me, how are you? What's going on? How was your experience? What was your experience? Rather, she went right in to her experience. So that was my big lesson in how we have to be very careful about how we reveal psychic information. And what I've always told people is, if you feel like it's something important to bring up, then you've got to approach it very, very gently. And I say, for example, it's like when a child asks how are babies born, right? We don't go into the details, right? We start with something simple, like they come from mommy's tummy. Okay. And so this is what I teach people. Well, wouldn't you know, I had a woman come in for she was a marathon runner, I think, and she just wanted to be able to relax so she could run marathons better. Simple intention. I'm working with her, and in her field, I see a child. I see that, she recently had an abortion, and that that child was out there, and there were some things left to resolve. Okay. Session's over. How do you feel? Oh, I feel so relaxed. I feel so good. And I said, great. And I thought, well, you know, I have to be careful. I'm trying to practice what I preach. But then I asked her what in my mind at the time was an innocent question. I said, oh, you know, is there anything about a baby? She looked at me, these intense eyes, and, you know, it was like, don't go there. And honestly, Natalie, she got out of my treatment room pretty darn fast. And it was such a lesson that even in the moment I thought was a simple inquiry and a general inquiry, it wasn't. And you know, it was a kind of a subtle mistake, but it was a huge mistake. And so that's really, you know, really hit home for me. And I usually tell this story to my students, and it's like, just let them have their own experience. And especially if it's a first-time person and you don't know them, and if they want to come back, and, you know, if they want to go deeper, that's fine. That's up to them. But leave them alone, you know? And don't, just because you have information, it doesn't mean that it's meant to be shared. And I teach people, you know, you get that information and you should check in. You should ask, you know, is this something to be shared? Is this not? Not, I didn't do that, you know? And so I feel like this is, it's such an important learning for all of us.
I this is the first, like, oops, someone shares about messages, and I love it because it's such, for me, it's a very personal thing. But I think you said, ask them who they are and where they are, and allow them. And also, the healing will happen. You don't need, sometimes you don't even, the healing is happening. So yeah, if they're very, you know, I really appreciate you sharing that, oops, because I think it's going to be so useful for people. And thank you for sharing that so much. But yeah, we learned the hard way. Like, yeah, it's. But
yeah, I mean, I really tried in my book to present a lot of oopses.
Yeah.
You know, because, right, this is how I learned, and this is how others learn. And like you said, you know, as teachers, people are going to put us up on a pedestal and feel like, oh, I could never do like that, or I could never be like that. And it's like, yeah, no, we're human.
Well, some teachers don't do that. They say only I can do the healing. And that for me is like, that's a red flag, literally. Like, you know, that is. But so I really appreciate this, because messages are very complicated. And sometimes we're so excited. But we also have to check, is this me wanting to feel, yes, I have psychic power? Is it about me and telling her, like, look what I. So we also have to check that, because at the end, we have to trust the healing that's happening when during the session, you know?
Yep.
Unless it's really smacking. My theory is like, I only will share it, like, literally, it's like, you have to at least 3 to 4 times. And I'm like, but I tried the same thing. I tried to ask them, like, how are you doing? What did you experience? This is about you. And so I share very little, which I honestly, some people come and they want me to, I remember when I started, people, I will do psychic readings, because I could do psychic readings before Reiki. Like, honestly, it's very easy. I can still do it. Like, I look at people, like, if I'm in the right state of mind. But then people came for me to tell them what to do. And that's not healing, right? No.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I should have known this lesson from being a psychologist, right? You know, my job was not to tell people what to do. It was to facilitate them finding it. But for whatever reason, this time, you know,
I feel like, yeah, it was an oops, but you took the time to phrase it in a way that was a lot more delicate than what came to you. But this is to show that even when you really are careful, even when you take the time to phrase it in a way that is very non-threatening, because the way you really, like, it could have been, like, you had, like, a lot of, even when we think we're being careful, it still may hurt someone.
Absolutely. And I think we need to remember that Reiki healing is exactly what you said. It, you know, the healing is going to happen in the way that it's supposed to happen. And it's not about us, and it's not about us intervening. And to me, it's the contract with the person is not about giving them a psychic reading. Now, I think that there are Reiki practitioners who, you know, that's part of the official contract. I'm going to do Reiki and I'm going to do a reading.
But that is valid, right? As long as you say official contract, that's what I offer and that's where you come from. Totally. But that's not an intrinsic part of Reiki practice. Sometimes people think if they don't have messages, they are not good practitioners, and that is not the case.
Yeah.
And I have a question for you. I'm going to put, obviously, all your contact details. You wrote a wonderful book about Kaliki Reiki, very comprehensive. I'm going to put the link to that. I'm also going to put the picture of the trident. I cannot see the name. Sorry, I'm trying to, but I'm very bad with that. And okay. Your contact information. So most of your trainings are in person. You also offer trainings online so that people know. Perfect. So people know they can reach you. And again, we all have different aspects, right? Again, if you're called to, you're like, Rajashri, please contact her. We all go to the same place. And, you know, a wonderful experience. Thank you so much for saying yes to this interview with me.
I just want to say one more thing, because I'm very excited about this, and I think you'll appreciate it. The book is actually going to be translated into Spanish. So it's going to be coming out, I think, mostly in Mexico. It's going to be distributed, but
That's congratulations. Yeah, it does bring my heart. There is not a lot of Reiki materials in Spanish, so it does make my heart very happy.
Okay.
There is some of them, but compared in English, there is so much variety and so much range. So I love that there are more options for people to read in Spanish about Reiki. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Natalie. I'm so delighted.
Thank you for listening to the Dive into Reiki podcast. You can read a full transcript of today's interview at diveintoreiki.com/blog. If you found this episode helpful, please hit the subscribe button, leave me a review, or just share it with your friends. It makes all the difference. Thank you. Gracias. Merci.